Ka pai. So we're very lucky to be able to share some kōrero with Sarah Stratton today, who hails from the north, but she can also elaborate on her connections in a minute. So she's got a background in law, which really serves her in a critical lens that she applies to her mahi around identifying those sites of colonialism and technology. She is passionate about her people and empowering Māori in digital spaces, which brings a cognizance of the colonizing potential of algorithms and the racism that can be inadvertently and blatantly built into them. She completed her Masters of Technical Futures with Tech Futures Lab, which was around this kaupapa as well, that looked at biases in algorithms, in particular with the lens, with the Māori lens. E rere atu nei ngā tai o mihi ki a koe, Sarah, i tau whakaae ki a kōrero ki a hau, ki a wānanga tahi ki au i tēnei rangi. Nā reira, tēnā whakamohio mai ki a rātou, whakamohio atu ki a rātou, whakarongo ana, ko wai koe, nō hi a koe.
Oh, kia ora, Joni. Ngā mihi nui ki a koe hoki, ki a Tech Futures Lab. Okay, ko wai koe, no he koe. Ko te taha tōku kranima ko Ngāti Hine Pukipukirau, ko Motitau te maunga, Taumarere, te awa, ngā tō kimata whaoroa te waka, ngā Henare, Tipene, Sherrington, ngā whānau, Manukoroki, te marae, ai. Ko te taha o tōku kranipa, ko Ngāti Kahu, te iwi, Patu Koroha, te hapū, Karaponia, te marae, Mamaru, te waka, Taua, Heroani, Johnson, Ma, ngā whānau, ai. Ko Sarah tōku ingoa. Yes, that is me, I think.
Lovely. Okay, so from the outset, I had the joy and the privilege of being able to read a piece that you'd written on your kaupapa that you focused on for your masters. So from the outset, it could be really helpful for some people to understand what an algorithm is and what algorithmic bias is.
Well, actually, algorithms, it's really quite simple. They are sets of instruction to achieve a purpose. And in technically speaking, when certain words get triggered, the instruction that the algorithm had to fulfill gets triggered. And a much simpler way of looking at an algorithm is like a recipe, you follow it. The difference between AI and an algorithm is I'm like an algorithm. When I'm following a recipe, I do not waver. It says a quarter of a teaspoon, I'm doing that. But AI will be somebody who's very creative and they're like, hey, who cares? I'm going to put in a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this, that, and the other. That's a slight sort of difference between an algorithm and AI. So it sounds really tricky, but it's not. These sets of instructions are things we've had since the beginning of time that are now just a tech. Now it's become a technology, but they're data. It's just simply data that's fed into a machine to achieve something. That's really what an algorithm is. So, gee, it's a big question now. Algorithmic bias. Again, very simply put, I have a theory, and the theory is, data in and of itself isn't exactly what you'd call bias, but so say I've got a problem. I think I've got a problem. I want to achieve a solution. I need to research that. Therefore, I am going to, the whole thing starts with me and my vision, what I deem to be a problem, what I think could be a solution, and who I go to collect that information from and how I collect that information. That's what happens in technology, but it's happened in the analog world. We've done research again for ages and ages and ages, and algorithmic bias occurs when there's not enough diverse lenses from that I've got a problem right through to here's my solution. Because if it's just left up to me and I don't do proper research, I don't gather a diverse range of lenses to make sure that I've captured just about everybody I could possibly think of, every situation, then my data is going to be pretty inefficient, pretty skewed, not because perhaps, well, we're all of us biased and that we've all of us got limits and preferences. We're each of us built that way. So individually, there's no greater group of people that are more biased than others. But if you only just get the same demographic of people involved, on the whole, their preferences, what they think is important, who they see, what they see, what they hear, how they think about it, it's all kind of going to be skewed. And that's what I mean by algorithmic bias.
So is it kind of like, if I think about that recipe analogy that you had, is it like the people that write the recipes, they live in England, so they use like English ingredients that we don't have in New Zealand?
Oh, that is perfect analogy. Or so they don't even know that there might be a pineapple, for example, because they've never seen a pineapple, heard of a pineapple. They've been using their poor old apples and that's all they've got. But all I've got is so they make all these things about apples. You could say, oh, but what about pineapples? That's not very fair. They haven't included it, pineapples and anything. That's like, because
I want a kumara in my roast meal.
But you're, yes,
they don't sell Yorkshire puddings in all the supermarkets.
You know, that is a really good, simple analogy. because I know in my ongoing mahi, it's tempting to think that there's a group of people that are more biased than anyone else, but actually, I also liken it to, I've got a few friends that are in wheelchairs. Their whole lives are dictated to by the planning of a society that's built with people that stand upright. And so, but they say if we all got together and got to create the world, you know, half of us would be banging our heads on everything. You know, they wouldn't be doing it on purpose, but they might like to laugh at us. But it's just that this whole collection of people are building something that means something to them. It doesn't mean something to everybody. That's another pretty practical, simple analogy for what happens if there's not enough diversity in this tech space.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. And a lot of stuff I do, we look at unconscious bias and the fact that it's, you know, we're built that way. However, we need to consciously go about unpacking that, understanding where our biases are so that we can challenge them. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Wonderful. So with that in mind, what do you see as the key challenges for Māori and indeed other Indigenous cultures as well around the world in terms of algorithmic biases? And how they can perpetuate colonization?
Yeah, I mean, yes, big question. Okay, for algorithms, so when there's a bunch of algorithms put together, AI, so it's around about artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence takes an algorithm, many algorithms, and starts to, and machine learning as well, and they start to make decisions. This is where somebody's becoming creative, if you like, and they're going a bit off-piste. They're off the recipe. And so AI is simply able to take all this gathered data and algorithms, and then they might start making new decisions based on the data that's involved. So, and why people are in this huge hurry to have AI is because basically AI is used to predict. You know, there's this human desperation to predict the future and predict what's going to happen. And we see it in, you like that movie? Maybe you'll like this movie. You like that music? Maybe you'll like this music. There are all these predictive algorithms and AI going on in our lives now. You want to get to from your house to down the road? This is the better route for you because they've judged that fast efficiency is more important than the scenic, beautiful route. You know, so it's making all these judgments on your behalf. And it's also making love matches if you really wanted to. So you like, you know, green and you are this tall and you, here's some perfect matches for you. Well, we all know, like, it's kind of funny, but we all know that how that often ends. And why it's so sort of terrifying is because a lot, you know, now there are these predictive AI tools being used over people's lives. Like, will you get the treatment that you need? Will you get a mortgage? Will you be a recidivist criminal? Will you in fact be a criminal? This is now what these tools are being used for. They're being used to make serious decisions over people's lives. And one example I use in my master's is a tool that's often used now. In 2016, it was a tool called Compass. And it was a predicting tool used in America in an American corrections system, and its role was to predict out of the prisoners that they already had who was going to be a recidivist. And of course, you're going to know the answer straight away. Who they chose was going to be most likely to reoffend and who wasn't. So the black men were judged, basically, as predicted. It was predicted they would. Now, a group came in to analyze that technology and found that it was factually incorrect based on the actual, the full facts and the whole story of each prisoner. Because what these algorithms have, are they collect data points, but they can never know your full story. And so it made all these judgments and predictions based on data points. And it made terrible mispredictions. I mean, for us as Māori, to be honest, I feel like it was a given. You knew that's what was going to happen.
Because we occupy so many negative statistics, then we're naturally those information data points. They're going to disadvantage and disenfranchise us from the outside.
Yeah, because like my point is. My point is whatever happens in the analog is going to happen in the digital, but exponentially so. So it's not the machine's fault, it's the data. And it's not the data all on its own, it's the who. We always have to go back to the who of everything, especially to do with digital technology. Who's involved at every stage of technology from creation to deployment? And why Māori, Indigenous and other minority groups need to worry is because already the evidence is showing, the research and the evidence is showing that the people that are already marginalised are marginalised exponentially. And the problem is there's going to be no human involved in. So say, because all those things happen anyway. I go to a bank, I look a certain way, my CV, if you like, has those data points of not very good job, all she moves about, lives in this location. No, she can't get a mortgage. So we've already known it in a human way, that bias, that prejudice. But in a machine, you can challenge that. At least you can still challenge that. You can ask for it's gone out of my head. When you want something reviewed, you can ask for a review of that decision. Same even with court, you can always make an appeal to the judge, and another judge is involved. And of course, judges themselves make human error and have human biases. The thing with AI is that soon it's going to be a little bit like, well, the machine told me so. The technology has deemed it. Therefore, it's not me, the judge, or us, the parole panel. It's this predicting machine. And isn't it factual? Isn't technology fact, therefore irrefutable? And that's where there's a danger. And so the problem for Māori and Indigenous and other marginalised people is actually the solution. So if the problem is it's going to affect us because we don't occupy all those places of from creation to deployment of society, let alone technology, then the answer is simple to me. We need to be there so that we then also start to redesign not just the technology, but even, you know, bringing our values and our worldview into these spaces will not just change what technology is literally implemented or even created, but systems will change, societies will change. And hopefully, my hope, even way back at law school, was that whoever makes the laws or creates the technology will have a society that will reflect them. And so if we're all of us involved, which technology is allowing us to do more and more and more, we might have a society and technology that starts to reflect ourselves, that we can see ourselves in there. So that's the opportunity is for us.
Sometimes I when I'm listening to you, I'm thinking it's how do we bring our humanity, the irony of bringing our humanity into the algorithms and into technology? How do we instill humanity and values and things that matter to us? Because it can go either way. You know, if you've got people that view justice as punitive, then it's going to be the recipe is going to be made in that way to be having a punitive approach. Whereas if you've got something that's more aligned towards restorative justice, then that's where it's going to go towards, or something that's more aligned with you know, growth and transformation, then it's not going to interpret that data in the same way, is it?
Yeah. And I mean, we've got to be clear, we're talking about technology and one on the one hand, but we're really talking about humanity on the other. There is no silver bullet for us. You know, it's us that needs to change. And you know, in my master's, when I first started to hear all about this algorithmic bias, you know, and I realized that this is not new. This is analog colonialism. And how, you know, the demographic of people, colonial people who imported their system here to Aotearoa, New Zealand. So that demographic there, you could only be landed, or, you know, own land, be a male and be literate. Their values were individual ownership of anybody or anything that you like. Those were the values that were protected. And therefore we have a whole system built on that, just that one fundamental law. And so, you know, they've imported that and slapped it on top of us. You know, this is a very long history cut into 5 seconds, but you know, it's that now. And when you look at the demographic of who are the main big tech companies other than TikTok in China, they are mainly from San Francisco, and they are mainly white, privileged men. And so again, I go, so me, Maori, you know, I think, well, it's not rocket science to make another prediction of what happened before will happen again if the players don't change. If the players don't change, the game won't change. You need different players at all levels to so that's a technological thing, but it starts from, as we know, it starts in society, at kura, schools, and right through society. And that's no easy task. I'm not saying it's easy, but it needs to be done. And partly some of the answer is, you know, at first when I was at law school, that's about 25 years ago, I used to have this dream about embedding, I sound like a dictator, but embedding what I knew and what we grew up with, embedding that in the minds of people who had control. Because 25 years ago, I still couldn't really see how Māori could really have enough power to change this dynamic and the system. But I'm heartened, actually, over the last 25 years, and especially in the last, I'd say, maybe five, I want to say, years.
I'd say that too. There's been such a, it's like an exponential growth of awareness and goodwill, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. Like, I've seen that as well. Just over the last, just a small pocket of the last 5 years, there's been a real change, hasn't there? Which is
really— Yes. And my thinking has changed. So my thinking has gone from we need to have Māori in their spaces to offer that other point of view. If we can't do that, we need to somehow embed our values, our thinking into these structures. But I'm changing now to thinking, but actually our side of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, our te ao Māori tikanga, wasn't about assimilation, because that's what assimilation does. It makes you me. I'm the standard and you've got to be me. But, you know, one of our kaumatua, he's passed now, but he goes, oh, Māori, you know, we were so clever. He was talking about religion. He said, you know, with religion, we embrace, we don't replace. So we embraced what sort of worked for us, but it doesn't replace who we are, because that's my rangatiratanga right there. I cannot give that away. I cannot make somebody else anything, but I can. But we understand how to be our uniquely individual rangatira within, but totally governed, because we are connected and totally responsible as one of the whole, not just these individual islands that other cultures really value. So I'm learning now, I'm changing my view from embedding others to think like me. It's partnership then, if people want to talk about partnership, is, well, you've got your kaupapa, you always will. I can't change that, and I've got my kaupapa, and I don't want you to change that. But if we can agree on together on strengths and weaknesses, shared resources, sharing, you know, what we need to share, and many people are involved, if we can just agree on next step, because the long term is, I think most humans want to have a flourishing future, want the future to be flourishing, I'm sure. So if we can just agree that we will get there differently, but together, I think that that's a bit of a different thought for me, that I'm allowed to have my different. I have to accept that other people might be different. But, you know, this AI stuff, we all of us need to be very clear and quite decided that we are going to work together, much like in COVID. You know, New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand has really, to me, embodied a te ao Māori tikanga and kawa for dealing with this. And that is, the individual is important, yes, but not more important than the whole of us. And we've achieved some results, and I know people are unhappy at some of it, but I think we're quite a leading beacon. And I think it's, you know, I think there's hope there that Māori actually do lead and govern in very subtle ways, and they just need to be said more, spoken out loud, that the processes that we've just followed through this COVID practice are very te ao Māori. Because when you look at how, so the British culture, that the Pākehā culture that is here, and when you look at where their roots are, their whakapapa is, and when you see how those countries have fared, they've resisted, they have fought against Australia, Britain, America, they fought against their liberties being impinged, but we didn't see it like that. We just knew that we needed to do something together. And I think that's a really tato way of looking at things. And I give a bit of credit to Māori there.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah, I totally think that. And I really like that idea of co-governance, which I think is increasingly in that co-partnership that seems to be happening more and more, which, you know, could be the solution to this, you know, this issue that you've brought up as well around, you know, just being really aware of who are your partners when you're going through those processes of creating these algorithms. and just being real cognizant of that responsibility and being cognizant of your own biases, isn't it? And I think that's like step one, understand your biases so that you can counter them, you know, and so that's
well, really accept that you've got them.
Accept that you've got them.
Yeah. I mean, just admit it, because that's the biggest problem, I think, is lots of people like to think that they don't. The biggest help is step one, admit that you've got them.
Yeah, exactly.
So and I kind of think too that if we're talking technology, if we're talking the power of technology and digital technology, I'm thinking, you know, like part of my master's, I really wondered if we could, why can't we make a tool that, you know, like I had a cancer scare on my skin, and they used what they call the dermoscope and found that I indeed did have skin cancer. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if technology is so clever, why can't we come up with a bioscope? And so I searched it and I looked for it. And I one day, you know, I pitched it even to some group of techie people, and, you know, like where you can sort of scan your own data. You can scan whatever it is that you've written on your computer. You can scan it and find out about yourself. And then you can do that with others as well. I mean, then I thought, oh my God, it would become terrifying. But, you know, it's about understanding yourself.
I think there are things that you can do around cultural intelligence, which is a kind of too, where you can measure your cultural intelligence, however that happens, but and it spits out a bit of a response for you to tell you how culturally intelligent you are or whatever.
Oh. I don't want to take that test.
I'm sure you'd be absolutely fine, because it's like first out, it's about mindset, you know, like the mind you occupy, and then it's the set of skills that you have around that. So yeah, that's so interesting. So inside that, you know, in a modern world, we have so much information at our fingertips, which is increasingly becoming a real challenge and a real thing that we try to become as Indigenous peoples, and looking after and maintaining the integrity of our information and our data and all of those things. So I'd really like to hear what you think about that data sovereignty, that information sovereignty.
Yeah. Well, if we think of data as whenua or even wairua, because it's slightly those things, isn't it? It belongs to us. It's so integral to my identity, all those data points that they pick off me every time I click on, you know, something that I buy, something that I read, something that I, you know, that I don't under, well, it's because I know little about the actual data gathering process, but, you know, it's so intimate, actually. So if we think of data like that, we just don't give ourselves away, you know, and this whole idea of data sovereignty is so important. Like Te Mana Raraunga, and there are initiatives that the government have put out trying to make tech that's for Māori, by Māori. I agree with that. And where it's stored, where it's hosted, how it's all collected, I think it needs to be so, we need that. I was talking to Stats New Zealand about things, and I remember just thinking, why can't, you know, like we have a hauora up here, one of like lots of hapuani, we have a hauora, you know, why don't we own all that data? It's so important. And it's not just that we own it, care for it, look after it. I think our model for caring, kaitiaki, rather than owning it, is way more sustainable for not just Māori, but for anybody. But we're speaking about ourselves. So I think there is a lot of progress happening toward developing, and there might even be a Māori cloud. I'm not sure. Because the thing is with our data, it's stored, when it's stored overseas, then they're allowed to do with it what they want. It doesn't matter what New Zealand government says, or our Te Tiriti o Waitangi. Te Tiriti o Waitangi doesn't apply to Google, you know, things like that. And so for us to have an understanding of what that means, how we can go about it, there are some very clever people, other Māori, who are all over this, and they're doing that. We just need to understand a bit more and agitate like we've agitated for the last 180 years for Māori to have our rangatiratanga over our, now it's data. It's been our whenua, it's been our moana for our maunga, our reo, our, you know, everything, and now it's data. It's just another thing that Māori, we, those of us that can, need to try and agitate for. So,
and I think it's a real practice, like people kind of think of data in a real kind of like, you know, airy-fairy way, because they don't understand the implications for everyday life. But it's really simple, like the fact that I remember once my data getting used by my insurance company to push up my premiums because they saw something in my medical records. And then when I went to a new doctor's, when I moved up to Northland, I went to a doctor's surgery and I wanted to enroll, and they wouldn't let me enroll in this. Well, it said on there, can we take your records from the last place? And so because of what had happened, I said no. And then they said, oh, actually, you can't actually sign up without giving us that data. Yeah. And so I didn't have sovereignty over my own data. I couldn't decide whether my medical records, you know, there was nothing in there, but it was the point of it for me, actually.
Yeah, it is the principle.
Yeah. And so we don't have that sovereignty over our data, how it's used, who uses it. And we don't have access to things if we choose not to share it sometimes.
Well, you know, and the point is too that like Stats New Zealand and lots of government things, they're collecting data unnecessarily about us as well. We don't even need to tell them half the stuff that they ask for, and then we don't get to hold on to it. We can get access perhaps to it, but it should be the other way around. We should be, you know, and I know there's an argument that we're not ready yet to store all of that, but I think we're getting there. I think we're getting there, but just for, like you say, for everyday. In an everyday way, people are just trying to put food on the table. I know that. People are just trying to homeschool the kids through COVID. You know, these feel like lofty things to think about. And they sort of are. But I just think if enough people are talking about it and working toward it, then because this is a multi-layered, I don't want to say problem. This is a multi-layered issue.
Yeah,
Māori and our data, but it's the same for everybody. And you know, my whole thing is tikanga is not just good for Māori, it's really quite good for everybody, and people are now starting to see that globally. You know, there's a global interest in how we as Indigenous people do things. We need to hold on to that knowledge though as ours.
That's a good way to put it. It is. We just have to have that sovereignty still over that knowledge, and then so we use ways that we deem fit and that we choose, not out of our control. Lovely. Okay. So just to finish up here, what are you most excited about with Māori being in the digital age? And, you know, despite the challenges that you've talked about, those algorithmic biases and AI not necessarily reflecting our values if we don't correct that representation, what are you excited about with how it can further us as a people?
Well, I am excited. I'm excited actually about who we are. That this is, you know, I make bold claims, but you know, in our DNA, in our kōrero, especially with Māui, we are told that in our DNA, we have what it takes to harness great energy, great powers. And not just that, we have in our DNA the values of manaaki, you know, mātou tātou, not just I, me, me, but we and us. Kaitiaki, not own, but we're going to look after, knowing that our future, past and present is right now and we're responsible for it. I think I'm excited that now is the time that these values are needed. And I don't just speak off the top of my head. I have read a couple of books and spoken to, you know, people overseas. And I know it. I know we're faced. So this is what I feel most excited about and most wanting to tell our tamariki and rangatahi and our old ones that, you know, we've faced so much in 180 years. We've weathered that. We have survived and some are thriving. So I think the world has been absolutely brought to its knees by COVID, and also digital tech anyway was already starting to dismantle old structures of business and law and things like this. And people are just sort of running on the spot going, I don't know how to do this, but we do. I say we do. We faced tsunamis. Get out the surfboard and ride that wave, because we know how to do it, but we just need the chance to do it. And by that I mean, so like the World Economic Forum, they came to New Zealand to look at regulation and AI, and you know, they talked about having this centre of excellence. But I said, let Māori run that. Let us run that, because we've got what it takes. And that's what we need. We need to be able to show that we do know how to handle the biggest things that life is bringing to us. And that's my excitement. Digital tech and also what's been happening around the world makes me excited for Māori that now's our time to be ourselves, to be truly ourselves. And so it's really big. You go, holy heck, it's so big. Where do you start? Well, I go, start local, start small. And that's what I've been doing, is just, you know, in my hapū, we're still in a treaty stage, you know, down the road here, you know, you just have to do the small things and they all grow. But my biggest passion is for rangatahi and mums. You know, our Māori wahine are the biggest percentage in prison than anywhere else in the world. Māori women are the most incarcerated women in the world. So so you got to start with mums and rangatahi, and you upskill one, you start bringing this digital knowledge to schools, you'll upskill the other. You upskill mum, you'll upskill the kids. And in that, you're going to give them that mana, that dignity that I think a lot of Māori women have not had for centuries. I want that mana restored. And the way you do it is you give them the language of technology, you give them a bit of simple programming, you give them some confidence, and then you send them on their way. Never has there been a time to trial and test stuff and fail and try again and fail and try again. Never.
And our people are so good at that. We're such tinkerers, you know, we figure stuff out, you know, and so that's definitely one of our strengths. All right. I'm so grateful for you making time to have a call to you about this issue, which is really big. We could have talked about this for 4 hours, I'm sure.
No, kia ora to you, Joni, and again to Tech Futures. I just want to say this, if you've got a weird open door that's opening to you, jump in, because that's what Tech Futures was. It was a weird door that opened, I jumped through, and it's totally given me this next phase of my life. So,
all right. Lovely, thank you. So ngā mihi atu ki a koe te tuakana, ki a ngā kōrero a tā hua mo te ao hangarau, ngā tūkino, ngā mea pai, ngā mea kino i roto i tērā ao, e mihi ana ki a koe, e hua, nā reira ai, tēnā koe.
Kia ora, e mihi nui hoki.